Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, December 2nd, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Are you free at the moment?
No, because I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Hey, back in early February of this year, I launched this new series of podcast interviews called Sex Edge-ucation. I promised back then that this series would take a look at the fascinating world of fetish sex and kink. We touch on topics both familiar and exotic, and I remember telling you that I could guarantee that our investigation would be interesting, stimulating, and very informative, because we would be chatting with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world.
How convenient to find you at home. May I come in?
Yes, you can come in, but this isn't my home, nor is it convenient. But sit down and you'll learn something. Well then, here we are 10 months later and we're still going strong. My first guest in this series, Dart, introduced me to today's guest way back in February. But it's only now that I finally have this opportunity to introduce her to you. Join me in welcoming the amazing Andrea Zanin. I know, and I'm excited too, because she's the last guest in this series for 2009, and she's a humdinger, don't you know? She's also from Toronto, as is Dart. And like him, she is internationally known and respected. She's a writer, an educator, with the queer, polyamory, and BDSM leather communities, and she brings a unique voice to this ever-growing chorus of exceptional guests in this series. You can visit Andrea at her website, sexgeek.wordpress.com.
I had a sexual encounter with my landlord today.
Are you bragging or complaining? Listen, today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this fetish and kink series. It's the Dr. Dick Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, fetish wear, and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun, and I might add, easy. Yesery sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did.
What about your sugar daddy? The one with the big car, he's got loads of money. What's his name?
I think you should mind your own business. That's what I think. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Andrea, and thank you for dropping by drdicksexadvice.com. It's a pleasure having you, so to speak. How does it feel being had?
This is when you're giving me an opportunity to say something awful like, what do you mean? Is it in yet? Or, you know.
Oh, we're off
so far, so good.
Yeah, we're on our right foot here, I can tell. So it's really, really good to finally connect with you. You know that I've been chasing you since my very first interview in this series, the one that I did with Dart. And that, by way, was in early February. So what do you have to say for yourself, madam?
Well, I think you might be just about to say it for me. life is pretty freaking busy these days. So I'm glad we finally managed to make it happen.
Good. Yes, you are busy, and you're busy with grad school and community activism and counseling and studying and reading and teaching and writing and the brilliant Sex Geek blog. When do you find time to touch yourself impurely?
You know, not nearly as often as I'd like. I gotta tell you.
I know exactly the thing, and so I always do it during my podcast. So.
Oh, well, see, there we go. Awesome, good idea. Okay, hang on just a second.
It's multitasking, and it's so much fun. So there you have it.
Sweet.
So let's find out what makes you tick, shall we? How did you become the sex geek, and was there much competition for that title?
In fact, there is a lot of competition. No, I'm actually not the only sex geek out there. There's at least three or four more who are out there blogging, and I think there's a postmodern sex geek, and there's a guy who calls himself a sex geek, and I don't by any means claim it as an exclusive title.
And
I think it's funny because a lot of people want to call me the sex geek, and it's actually the blog that's called the sex geek, which I suppose sort of comes out to the same thing, but. I think I've always kind of been a sex geek, and then I was hanging out with a bunch of sort of poly geeky friends, but geeky in that classical sense, meaning they know way more about computers than I do.
Yes.
This is a few years ago, and I was feeling kind of all sad and lonely because I was the only non-geek in the room, and one of my friends sort of reached out and petted me and said, "You know, you're a geek." And I said, "No, I'm not." And he said, "Yeah, you are. You're just a sex geek." I was like, okay.
I can get into that.
Okay, I'm a sex geek. Sure, no problem. And so that's what I decided to call my blog when I started it a couple months later. And then I eventually had to put on business cards. And I don't know, man. That's not much of a story. There it is.
how long have you been doing the blog?
Sometime in early 2006 is about when I began. So a good about 3 years now.
Oh, yeah. It's grueling, isn't it? I don't know about you, but, you know, this consumes way too much of my time. Not that I have any life outside of this, but you know, just in case I ever tried to, it would be prohibited because there's no time.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of weird. It's weird that it's so compelling to me that I kind of just need to write, even though nobody pays me for it, and I'm not all that proactive about doing things like getting advertising and stuff. But I mean, for a long time, I was going from sort of like three or four posts a week down to, you know, once a week and down to maybe once or twice a month, and then all of a sudden I got roped into this... This Queer Canada Blogs invited me to take part in a national blog posting month, and I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden I found myself committed to posting every day, and I'm like, oh my god. I need to think of something to write every day. So November's been a little rough.
Just write little Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Well, you know, I mean, there's all this question about relevance, right? I mean, I could start putting stupid shit up there, but then why would people come and read it? And, you know, I don't know. My professional ethics, I suppose.
So you write about yourself. She lives in Toronto and is an organizer, educator, and writer within the queer, poly, and BDSM leather communities, as well as being an active trans ally.
Mm-hmm.
This is more than a passing interest for you, right? I mean, you eat and drink and sleep this stuff.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, that's how it's gone.
One of the things that I found so fascinating as I read through a lot of your stuff is that your site, Sex Geek, is a virtual graduate course in human sexuality. And you said you started writing it about 2006.
Yeah.
Was that your intention when you started writing? I mean, that this was going to be some kind of like a clearinghouse for, you know, ideas about human sexuality?
I mean, basically, yeah. I think my very first post ever on the blog, way back when I was still hosting it on Friendster, of all things, was titled, "Let's See How Long This Lasts." and the reason for it is because I was sort of like, you know, there's a lot of blogs out there where people write about their own lives and the things that they do, and it's not that those things can't be compelling, and I mean, certainly human stories are really can draw people in, but I wasn't really interested in being someone who was like, and today I picked the lint out of my navel, and then I fed my cat, and you know, like
That's what Twitter is for, damn it. That's not for blogging.
See, they didn't have Twitter back then.
I know, I know. But, oh, and what a bane to everyone's existence since.
Yeah, well, yeah, no kidding. but yeah, so I guess, I mean, I think I just had so many ideas and thoughts that were just sort of buzzing around in my head all the time when it came to sex that and I was reading about it and studying it and just, you know, being part of communities that involve sexual minorities and I was really just sort of, it was just on my brain all the time and there was nowhere for it to go. And I just started writing because I figured, well, you know, this way if anyone happens to be interested, they'll find it. And if nobody's interested, then they won't. And I would never have guessed in a million years that I would end up with the kind of readership I have right now. I was shocked when people I didn't know started knowing me as a blogger.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
And your reach is international, I'm gathering. Well, I'm in the United States, and you are in Canada, so absolutely international.
Yeah, it is.
But
and
you must
even
have visitors from, you know, all over the world, yes?
I seem to. My statistical tracking abilities are limited. I mean, WordPress gives some great technology, but I'm not an expert at using it, so all I can see is kind of what's right in front of me.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, if there's any evidence, I mean, I've certainly been invited to do speaking work in the States and overseas and other things, and I don't know how else people would have heard of me if it weren't for the blog. So, that's basically it. Kind of wacky.
Yes. You go on to say about yourself, she frequently speaks about alternative sexuality for universities, colleges, sex shops, community groups, and conferences in Canada and the States and internationally. What are some of the most pressing sexual concerns among college students these days? Is there a short list?
Is there a short list? You know, the thing is that depending on where I speak, the topics are so wide-ranging that it's a little hard for me to give you a, this is a typical thing, you know?
Right.
So, for example, if it's a student group that's bringing me in, they'll often have me talk about BDSM. That's a big one. They want to talk about BDSM. They want to know how to do it. They want to know what the basics are. They want to know, you know, is this safe? Is this normal? You know, the sort of basic questions. But if it's a teacher who's bringing me in, if it's a professor, then they want to talk about sexual politics and they want to talk about, you know, how to do good ally work or what it means to be a queer feminist or, you know, so it's a little all over the place, which keeps it fun for sure.
Right. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Can't complain.
And finally, you say about yourself, she has a background in women's studies and sexuality studies from Concordia University and is pursuing an MA in those same fields at York University with a focus on Canadian leather dyke history. Andrea,
you laugh. What's so funny about this?
I know, it's fascinating. Andrea has judged a number of leather titles contests, including GLLA, Boot Black 2008, International Miss Leather 2009, and Mr. Leather Toronto 2010. Canadian leather dyke history, that's pretty esoteric. That's why I giggled. is it safe to say that you consider yourself or you include yourself in that leather dyke?
Yes, that would be a good word. I certainly, depending on how you're defining it, I may or may not fit, but in my own head, it works for me, so,
yes,
you know, that's what counts, right?
It's so funny, you know, just last week, I Twittered a comment.
Oh my God, you're one of them.
No, I know, I tell myself every day that I'm not, but I really... And there's a method to my madness, but I never tell anyone that, you know, I'm pulling lint out of my navel. At any rate, someone tweeted about Oprah's show with Jenna Jameson, referring to a comment that Oprah made regarding the likelihood or her willingness to let her husband drop off kids at Jenna's house. And I'm going like, wait a minute. Oprah, husband, kids, why, she's a dyke. And then I tweeted just that. She's a dyke. And, you know, she doesn't have a husband. And she doesn't have kids. Well, the sex Taliban descended on me. No one calls themselves dyke. You can't use dyke. No one can use dyke. And I said, all my lesbian friends call themselves dyke. And, you know, they refer to me as their dyke daddy. So it's a really weird thing that, you know, sexual politics being as it is that, you know, one can't say the word dyke.
Well, I think the people who are probably upset about people using the word dyke are straight folks.
Yes.
Because I've never met a dyke who, I mean, you know, there's certainly people out there who wish the word would go away if they don't like it, but from that to trying to police somebody's self-identification, I don't know, man, that doesn't happen all that terribly often.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen. I mean, so for example, in, there was some writer who writes about poly stuff, and she wrote some post and put it all over the internet, blasting the uses of the words slut and fag and dyke, and I don't remember what else. I think she might have even said pervert, and I was just like, You hang out with some awfully boring people, don't you? Because you really think all of these terms are offensive, which means that the only context that you've heard them in is from people who don't, who use them offensively, which means you're not hanging out with the people who've reclaimed them and who use them as common currency.
Precisely.
Which means that you're probably a whole lot more homophobic than you'd like us all to think.
Right. And so that's a really a big thing for me, because, you know, and somebody else accused me of not being sex positive or being sex negative and sexist because I had used this term. And I said, for goodness sake, I mean, if sex positivity, you know, can be boiled down to political correctness, then we're in big trouble. But anyhow.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
I
get
digress.
Some funny feeling we might be on the same page about this one.
Well, and, you know, I'm glad to know a leather dyke whenever I see them. So are you a title holder?
No, I am not. In fact, I very, very, very strongly refuse to ever become a title holder.
Why is that?
Yeah.
You're judging these other with these other competitions. Why the one and not the other?
Well,
just
I still
for
find
my
it.
Edification.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I still find it kind of amusing that they want me to judge, because I've been pretty upfront and public about my opinion that letter contests don't really do it for me.
Yeah.
And then they keep asking me to judge them, and I'm like, all right. As long as you know that's how I'm coming into this, you know. I mean, to me, it's not that, I need to qualify this. I think that there are some amazing people who have one letter titles and that they do amazing work under those titles. I also think that the title circuit itself is set up to be, to sort of celebrate a kind of glamour that I don't find particularly appealing and is only sometimes useful. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't suit my own purposes as a speaker, as an educator, as a pervert of various sorts. Because I'm not really interested in the fame. I'm kind of interested in the work.
Right.
And there's a really strong emphasis on the fame in a leather circuit. Yeah. Which again doesn't mean that people don't do amazing things with it. They do. But I don't feel like me putting on a sash with somebody else's logo on it and traveling all over the world to speak to other people who are already sort of converts to the cause.
Preaching
is necessarily
to the converted,
the, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's, I don't think it's the best use of my resources. And and I think that, unfortunately, the title circuit does leave room for people to do pretty awful things, or at the very least to not live up to what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. It's like the imperial court kind of thing.
You know, yeah. And I mean, I say all of this while being, you know, fully aware that there's some great people and I've had
so
fantastic
true.
Experiences.
Absolutely. I agree.
You know,
totally.
Yeah, so I need to make sure that I don't come off like I'm totally trashing all the folks who put good work into this stuff. It's just,
some never
you know.
Invite you back for a contest, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
No, but it was a curiosity to me that you know, you weren't a, because most of the, you know, contests that I've seen, you know, the judges tend to be other title holders. So that was a curiosity. Good for you. Thank you very much.
Tell me about it. It's really weird.
So can we talk about Power Play then?
Absolutely. Bring it on.
What is Power Play from your point of view?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know. Depends what you're doing with it.
It could be on the spectrum. I mean, you know, just mind games that, you know, a vanilla couple would be doing to, you know, full-on, you know, hardcore S&M.
Well, I mean, power play is any time that you, I mean, if you're talking about power exchange in the BDSM sense, then what you're talking about is people who eroticize power differences and deliberately create them in order to have fun with them, right?
Right.
Now, I mean, that what your fun is, what your taste runs to, can mean anything from, I don't know, you know, having an erotic conversation every couple of months on your lunch hour to, you know, playing in a dungeon every once in a while to living a full-time dominant-submissive relationship where every single action you take is determined by the types of protocols you set up, right? So, I mean, it really does run the gamut, you know, to each their own.
Mm-hmm. But power play is not then, at least to your mind, and I think mine as well, synonymous with BDSM.
Well, it's sort of subsumed within the acronym, right?
Okay.
I mean, the D and S of BDSM, one of the things they stand for is dominance and submission. So, yes, it's part of it. But it doesn't have to be done under the aegis of a BDSM community, if that's what you're asking.
Right.
Like, you certainly don't need to have, you know, all of the fancy leather gear or, you know, the appropriate, I don't know, cuffs and collars and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, fundamentally, it's about a human connection, and that happens regardless of setting.
Right. And so power play... would you say that all BDSM is power play, but not all power play is BDSM?
No, I wouldn't say that either, actually, because I definitely know a lot of people who do lots of really exciting, wonderful sensation play that's not actually about power exchange at all.
Ah.
It's very much BDSM, but it's not about power, and I think that it's perfectly legit and lots of fun. So.
Well, there you go. See, and this is why I've waited so long for you to join us.
So that I could pontificate about power play.
Yes. And, you know, because I'm tired of pontificating, and it's good to have someone take over. So can you then define BDSM for us?
I can give you the classic acronym, but I think you could probably Google that and find it real quick.
Right.
I think that the way I talk about it is that I talk about it as being a triple, it's a combination of one or more of the following things. Power exchange, intense sensation, however you might define that, and the incorporation of fetish objects, right? So any one of those three or any combination of those three, and I'm defining all of those as broadly as humanly possible, because as soon as you start drawing the lines as to what counts and what doesn't, you're simply going to be wrong for someone somewhere. The BDSM acronym means some specific stuff, but even then, it doesn't... there's things that don't quite fit into any one of those things, and either way, it's not like people sit around talking about, so which one of the letters are you doing right now? Like,
Who are you?
It's just
Who's
not that
first?
Exciting.
Exactly.
We'd rather have
So, again, I'm going to just throw this out there for your feedback. BDSM is considered a kink, right?
Sure, yep.
But not all kinks are BDSM.
You would probably be accurate in saying that. And that's, I think, where fetish comes in.
Right.
Because certainly there's lots of, so for example, I once heard of a group of gay men in New York City who fetishized the feeling of wet blue jeans on their skin.
Yes.
And so they would get together on rainy days and dress in blue jeans and go out for walks. And this is their fetish, and it's their kink. There's not a whole lot of bondage, discipline, sadism, masochism, dominance, and submission in there, right? But it's just a kink, all right? That's not your average human being who sort of indulges in that particular type of sensory pleasure in that way.
Right. And they could have stayed home and peed on themselves, and it would have been so much easier.
Well, yes, and that brings up a whole other fetish, right? There we go, pour a glass of cold water. Certainly there's tons of kink out there that doesn't really fall into under the rubric of BDSM, which is why you get these interesting social situations where there's a fetish party and there's no place for the players to play, so they get all grumbly about it because they think that the fetish people are doing a bad job, and they call the fetish folks S&M stand-in models, and then you get the S&M stand-in model folks who think the players can't dress to save their lives and, aren't keeping in, with the atmosphere of the event, and why the heck are they hitting each other anyway? Geez, isn't that going to ruin their outfit? And, you get an overlap of communities that really often don't have a whole lot in common but end up mashed into the same spaces, often because they think each other is sexy or because they don't have anywhere else to go. So presents some interesting dilemmas.
All right. Here's a question I get all the time on my site, and I suspect that you hear it a lot in your speaking engagements as well. Are people who are into BDSM psychologically messed up?
No more so than your average.
It's pretty fucked up, basically.
Well, I think that in my experience, one of the reasons that I've gravitated towards the BDSM community, and not simply the practices, right, because those are two very different things. You can do BDSM without ever going to a dungeon. And one of the reasons that I've found myself spending so much time in community is precisely because there are so many wonderful and amazing people there who are accustomed to handling the currency of power and of consent and of trust and of negotiation, right? So it becomes something that, to me, makes for, really rich possibilities for relationships and friendships, because you all sort of share a bit of a shorthand. So in that sense, you could potentially say that that BDSM practitioners are people who are even healthier than average. But I'm not going to go there either, because I think that that's a bit of a misnomer, because in any community, you're going to find people who are messed up in the head.
Right.
Anywhere. I don't care. Find me a group of stamp collectors and I'll find you some crazy people, right? So you can't sort of make a blanket statement about it like that. I think that the difference is that I don't think people do become kinky or get into kink because they are messed up in the head.
Right.
Not that you couldn't.
Yes.
But then again, you could do just about anything. Like,
exactly,
you could eat
that.
Macaroni and cheese because you have a psychological problem. You know, you could you could work out too much because you have a psychological problem. You could, you know, I mean.
That's right.
But trying to establish a causal relationship, I think it's just indicative of people's general anxiety about sex and anything that deviates from the norm.
And the follow-up question I get is, when I say basically the same thing as you did, only not nearly as nicely, is why would a normal, in quotes, person subject him or herself to pain and humiliation and or inflict pain and humiliation on others?
I mean, the very obvious answer is it gets them off.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we do a lot of crazy shit in order to get off. But I mean, I think...
You can tell me privately. Just kidding.
All right, there we go. No, I think we have a lot of people who, I mean, the location of that question comes from a place of coding these things negatively in the first place,
right?
And so necessarily, I mean, if I'm talking to somebody who's convinced that, I don't know, let's go to this macaroni and cheese thing. If I'm talking to somebody who's convinced that macaroni and cheese is the most disgusting thing on the planet, and it makes them ill, and they don't like the taste, and so on and so forth, then the very idea that somebody would do that for pleasure is going to be mystifying to them. And no matter how much I say to them, well, guess what? You know, some people like macaroni and cheese. They're still going to probably sit there wondering what the heck is wrong.
Yes.
Now, if you extrapolate that to the we have lots of human experiences of that we might name pain or suffering that we still see in positive ways, right? Like, I mean, you know, no pain, no gain. People really feel good when they put physical effort into getting into shape, you know, athletic achievement.
Exactly that.
You know, religious practices. You know, anything that requires effort, we could call suffering, and people don't have a big problem with that. It's just that people get really angsty when pleasure is involved in a sexual way.
That's,
you know,
right. It's so true. I mean, that is where it falls down for so many other people. Because I mean, you ask why somebody, you know, sits and watches hours upon hours of football, or, you know, or wrestling or whatever it is, or why they, you know, do extreme sports, or, you know, why they're, you know, passionate about one thing or another, you know, to the degree that, you know, everything else in their life is blocked out, and they can. It's all seems very rational, and you know, they can say, well, you know, I like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and I understand that other people don't, and that's fine and dandy. You know, I'm not trying to convert them, nor do I think that they are sick for not wanting to. But you add genitals and or pleasure, and somehow all of that stuff is knee-jerk and kicks in automatically, and, you know, we find ourselves in this turmoil about, you know, how to understand this, and, you know, and what does normalcy mean? And it's frightful, and yet it's so pervasive in our culture, we don't even know that we're doing it
for the most part. Yes.
So one of the things that I think I know about power play and power exchange, BDSM, is the role of endorphins and adrenaline. And that's where I'd like to go next, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it fair to assume that you are either a dom or a sub? Or are you a little bit of both, or predominantly one and not the other?
Okay, let's talk terminology for a second.
Okay.
So I identify, when it comes to power exchange, I identify as a dominant.
Okay.
That means that in my world, that means that I don't identify as a submissive, and that's not part of how I play.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that I never bottom.
I see.
Right? So if we are talking about the exchange of sensation, in that case, I am both a top and a bottom, depending on what's going on a given day or who I'm playing with, and what I'm in the mood for. But to me, that doesn't extend to the emotional experience of power exchange.
Right.
I don't have a draw towards submission myself. So
interesting. So let's talk again then about. Or continue our conversation about endorphins and adrenaline. Can you address those from either the dom or the bottom, top or bottom within intense play or yes?
Well, I think I mean,
what?
I think that
who invited him? He's such an idiot.
I'm not saying anything. The experience of endorphins comes with physical play, right? Uh-huh. Not that it can't also come with intense emotional experience, but just for the ease of explanation, let's just talk about about the physical end of things. So from that perspective, yeah, totally. Intense stimulation of the body, especially stuff that starts to raise, you would experience as pain under normal circumstances, you might experience as pleasure, but nonetheless your body reacts, and it's basically a natural high, right?
Uh-huh.
And from that perspective, yes, I've certainly experienced both the bottom end, as in being on the receiving end of that experience, and being on the top end, as in giving other people that experience, for sure. That's not necessarily the same thing, again, as dominance and submission, but certainly in a top-bottom situation, I'm in. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
What was the question?
How about adrenaline? Where does that fit in, if any?
I don't know if adrenaline per se, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to start talking to you about the specifics about how hormones operate in the body and stuff. I don't think that that's my area of expertise, but, and other substances for that matter. I think that adrenaline tends to be a response, to a fight or flight situation, right? So, if you were to, stimulate somebody in such a way that they had that kind of emotional reaction, I'm sure adrenaline could come into play.
Right.
I don't know if I could sit here and tell you that, if you use a cane, you will elicit an adrenaline response, and if you use a flogger, then it's surely going to be endorphins.
Right.
I think that,
I got
the particulars are up to an individual.
Mm-hmm. And so you say that you clearly have a preference for being a dom.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a particular kind of high associated with that role that would differentiate itself from a sub? Can you even address that, or is that something that...
I don't know if I'm qualified to say. certainly. I think that, for me, the experience of being in a dominant position, whether it's within the context of a scene or in a long-term context in my relationships... The pleasure that I take in that has a lot to do with trust.
Right.
It has a lot to do with the experience of having somebody open really, really deeply to me and share pieces of themselves that are very vulnerable. To me, that is a high right there.
Uh-huh.
It's not the kind of tangible high or chemical high that you might get if you're talking about endorphins and stuff. But there's an emotional satisfaction or thrill that's really powerful for me. In a scene, if I'm actually holding a dominant position and, torturing somebody, then I often get what we call a contact high.
Yes.
So basically I share the experience of their sort of flying on whatever their happy hormones are, sort of vicariously. And it's amazing how, when an intense connection is built, how it's I don't even need to be the one who's getting touched in order to enjoy that. Does that make sense?
Right, absolutely. And I've heard that from so many other people. And I think a lot of people in our audience, even people who have never experienced power exchange or power play or BDSM or kinky stuff, but they would understand that. That is something, that they understand that, being in the presence of somebody who is experiencing something, there's a contact.
It just happens to be one of my preferred venues.
Right. Many power players speak in terms of BDSM being both recreational and cathartic. I assume you agree with that as well?
I think it has a potential to be either or both, and many other things to boot.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. I mean, cathartic, I don't think you can plan for BDSM to be cathartic. I think that's something that, depending on what type of play you're in and what sort of mood you're in that night and what happens, certainly cathartic events can occur.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're looking for repeat catharsis as some sort of surefire mechanism, you might be disappointed. But and recreational, absolutely. For some people, it's just one hell of a lot of fun.
Now, have you been doing this for a while?
Yes, I have. the way that I like to describe it is, I say that I was born kinky, and that I've been playing with other people in kinky ways since I was about 12, which I know you're not supposed to say, but it's true. And that I've been part of the public BDSM community for about the last 10 years or so.
Wow.
But certainly my kink did not start the first time I walked into a dungeon. It was already there.
This ain't the first time at the rodeo. Huh.
Not so much. I was like, oh, but look at all those neat toys they have.
I already know what to do with them. They're in sync. Well, they were bred in my bone, for goodness sake. You don't even have to show me.
No, there's definitely a learning curve. There totally is. The tools do not come, like, I didn't get born with a flogger in my hand, you know? There's a certain skill set that needs to be picked up, and we all need our learning time, you know? So.
Well, listen, our time for today is over, and I have so much more that I want to discuss with you, including, you know, polyamory. May I invite you back for next week?
Absolutely. I'd love to be here.
Oh, yes. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. So until next week, would you give us your website address and walk us around a little bit, and so we'll know what to find there and we can visit throughout the week?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at sexgeek.wordpress.com, or just Google sexgeek, it'll pop up. It's pretty straightforward. I am not a fancy person. I've got a whole bunch of blog posts you're welcome to read back as far as you can stand it. And then I've got a page with a little bit of information about me and what I do, and then a list of my workshops coming up and speaking engagements and how to book me if you want to do that. And then there's a kink resources page and a poly resources page, and both of those basically have some kind of nerdy book list and some web links and stuff that you might find interesting. I do not pretend to have all the answers, but, you know, peruse to your heart's content.
You are absolutely wonderful, and I thank you so much for today, and I look forward to next week as well. So until then, be well, and we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Look forward to it.
Pretty fucking amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Andrea and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
I spent all my time rummaging inside his pajamas looking for his little willy.
You're just going to have to stop. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself. Or one of the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my monthly ever-so-popular sex toy awareness feature. You'll find that on my new site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. One last thing before we conclude. Would you like to become a sponsor for one or more of my sex advice podcasts? As you know, I plug a product or service at the beginning and end of each show, just like I'm doing now. Each podcast is its own posting on my site, along with the name of the podcast sponsor and a banner for the product or service. The beauty part of this unique opportunity is that once a sponsor's ad is included in a particular podcast, that sponsor is embedded there forever. Your sponsorship also underscores your social conscience. Your marketing dollars will not only go to promote your product, but it will be doing so while helping to disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages. Simply put, you just can't get a better bang for your advertising buck. For more information, contact me at drdick@drdicksexadvice.com. That's dr_dick@drdicksexadvice.com. And look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Boy, that's even better. Over and out.